Anatomy and Physiology, Gulf Coast State College. Today we're going to talk about everyone's BFF called cellular respiration. Now, a lot of students throw up a mental block at this point in time, but if you do that, it's just going to work against you. I'm going to try to make it easier than it really is. I'm going to tell you what you need to know so that further on down the road, when we finally get to organ systems, you'll have this buried somewhere deep in your memory banks, and it will enable you to have a deeper understanding of the good stuff coming up down the road. So yeah, I know it's nitty gritty. I know probably unless you're going to be a research scientist, you'll never use this again in your real life. Don't tell anybody I said that. But we've got to all do it one time. I had to as well. Let's start with the big picture, and I threw in a beautiful picture here to get us started. The story is, how are we going to get energy from food? And it all starts here with the circle of life. And I can't say that phrase without thinking of one of my favorite movies of all time, Lion King. Remember the Lion King with Simba and all, and they talked about the circle of life. Anyway, it really does start with the circle of life. Down at the bottom, I have some chemical formulas. Yes, you should know the players down there. They're fairly simple, and you should be able to recognize, and you should be even able to write those formulas, because it really is the basics of the circle of life. So where does it all start? It all starts with plants. Look, plants take in energy from the sun. There's the bright sunshine. We add some water, of course, to our plants. We also know that plants take in some carbon dioxide. And what do they do for us, for the planet? They put out oxygen, and also they create carbohydrates. Specifically, the one we're interested in as human beings are the starches. And then what do we do? What about us? Well, we ingest the carbohydrates in the form of starch. We take in, right, we breathe in the oxygen. And in the end, after the metabolic processes we're going to study, we're going to breathe out some carbon dioxide. We're going to create some water in the process. But most importantly, we're going to create the energy that we need to survive. Look how beautifully and perfectly intertwined and connected those formulas are. Coincidence? I think not. Let's begin here with an overview of how we get energy from food, and I put some of our favorite foods down there in a clip art to the bottom right. There's a double cheeseburger with some French fries. And for our course, I'm going to make it simple. I just want you to believe there's only three major food groups. I know some dietary books have these in fancy pyramids, but let's keep it simple for my pea brain and just for us in general. Let's keep it simple. Think of there's only being three major food groups: carbohydrates, lipids, and proteins. And when we ingest them, they are broken down in our guts. That's not the technical name. We'll learn the technical name later. By a process we studied called hydrolysis. Remember, that's adding a little bit of water to dissolve things. But we also have to throw in some digestive enzymes into the mix. And then after those food groups are digested, they're broken down into their basic molecules that we studied in chemistry, which include monosaccharides, mostly glucose, of course, also fatty acids, glycerol, and monoglycerides, which come from the lipids we eat. And finally, the amino acids, which are the components of the proteins that we eat. What happens next? And why are we busting the cheeseburger and fries down into those tiny molecules so that we can absorb them into our system? Our system really means our vessels, like our blood vessels. So we bust them into small molecules, we absorb them into our vessels, including blood vessels, and then they are sent through our blood to our tissue cells for what? Well, primarily, number one, for energy, which is what we're going to talk about here in this section. They may also be used for growth, for building blocks, so to speak. And some of these compounds may be stored. You know, glucose can be stored as glycogen. Pretty much anything we eat, especially in excess, can be stored in our fat cells as adipose tissue. And please recall, however, that we really do not have any ability, so to speak, to store proteins. What is our cellular fuel of choice? You know it's glucose. We love as body cells to eat it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We love it so much that we'll convert pretty much anything else we eat into glucose. Why? Why do we love this fuel so much? Because it contains many high-energy hydrogens. It really is a clean-burning fuel, so to speak. Here's a molecule of glucose. I drew it myself. Don't worry, you don't have to be able to draw it, but there it is. Remember, it's a hexose with this 6-carbon backbone, and look at all these beautiful high-energy hydrogens just waiting to be harvested, to be hacked off, and to be used to create ATP. Threw off some clip art to the right there. Makes it fun and interesting. There's an Easter bunny. Yep, chocolate Easter bunny. We're going to take the glucose out of that thing, and we're going to burn that fuel and turn it into energy. Before we do that, we need some basic definitions to understand how we do the energy transfer, how we transfer those high energy hydrogens into ATP. So we've got to be able to understand another type of chemical reaction. I left this one out when we did chemical reactions way back when. I didn't want to blow your minds away, so I saved this for now. There's another type of chemical reaction critical for energy transfer in the human body called oxidation reduction reactions. Yep, you got to know them. These are chemical reactions critical to the transfer of energy from organic substances such as glucose to ATP. Period, period, period. For you chemistry types, technically, oxidation refers to removal of electrons. And yes, that is happening here. But for us biotypes like me, and for biological systems, it's much easier to think of oxidation as removal of hydrogen and reduction as addition of hydrogen. Reactions are always coupled. That means when one substance is oxidized, another substance is reduced. Underline it, highlight it, star it, always happens. And these are often called, for short, redox reactions. I put some more clip art down here to the bottom of this slide to help us remember this and to make things a little more interesting. There's our chocolate Easter bunny with the glucose, with all the high energy hydrogens. We're going to run it through a series of oxidation reduction reactions. In other words, we're going to kind of burn that clean fuel. We're going to transfer that energy into ATP so that our bodies can use it. So we're going to get the energy from the bunny to the body. How are we going to do it? That's right, cellular respiration. Now we're ready to get into some nitty-gritty details. A good way to think of it is like burning fuel in our cells, kind of like burning gasoline in your car. And there's a picture of the fire to remind you to think of it like burning fuel. Here is probably the best, simplest definition of cellular respiration. If I asked you to define it, this is a one-sentence perfect answer. Cellular respiration is the complete oxidation, that means removal of hydrogen, of glucose, to produce what? Number one, ATP with triple red stars. as well as some other byproducts, which include carbon dioxide, water, and heat. That is what it is in one sentence. Details coming up shortly. In this process, again, we're going to use oxygen. We're going to release carbon dioxide while gradually converting the energy in glucose to energy which is usable by the cell, which is ATP. Notice the word gradually, because all these chemical processes we're going to talk about really do occur gradually. If it happened really fast, like super duper fast, all these chemical reactions, it kind of be like spontaneous combustion. Did you ever hear about that? You know, like 1 minute, I'm sitting in a rocking chair on a porch, just watching the grass grow. Next minute, poof, spontaneous combustion, and I'm a pile of ashes in a chair. Well, good thing this happens gradually, or else maybe spontaneous combustion really would occur. ATP, so important. It's going to trap the energy in its two high energy phosphate bonds when substances like glucose are broken down in catabolic reactions. And you know that catabolic reactions means breaking down. I think the Greek root word for catabolic, I think it means throw down. Yeah, so we're going to have a throw down here. We're going to throw down or break down some glucose. Think of ATP as our short-term energy money, which transfers energy between molecules so that what? Again, for things like movement or to build substances in the body. I like that word transfers. I want you to associate that word transfer with ATP, because a lot of texts, a lot of textbooks, a lot of medical literature refers to ATP as the molecule that transfers energy. Now we're going to really get specific. What are the processes involved in cellular respiration? There are four interrelated processes. They are, number one, glycolysis, followed by number two, formation of acetyl coenzyme A, then number three, the Krebs cycle, and finally, number four, the Mac Daddy of them all, the electron transport chain. Don't get nervous. This is just the sort of organizational slide. We're going to go through these processes one at a time in that order. I like to keep things organized for my pea brain, and also I hope it helps you. Let's go ahead and bust it down. We're going to start at the top with the first step in cellular respiration called glycolysis. And I love the word because it's going to tell you what's happening. Glyco refers to glucose, lysis means break apart, and in glycolysis, we're going to break apart glucose. Let's take a look at some of the details you must know. Number one, this process called glycolysis is the only one of the four steps in cellular respiration that is anaerobic. That means it doesn't need oxygen. An, root word, means without. Aerobic, where's my pointer? There it is. Aerobic means oxygen. So anaerobic means without oxygen. If you're asked in a testing situation, just remember this is the first one is the only one of the four steps that doesn't need oxygen. Where does this take place? You must know the location of glycolysis is in the cytoplasm. Let's look at some of the basic steps. You don't have to know all of them, thank goodness, for this course. First step for us is glucose will enter one of our tissue body cells, and the first thing we do to it is we
phosphorylated.
Now, don't get nervous. That's a big word. All it means is we add a phosphate to it and we turn it into a new molecule called glucose 6-phosphate, because this traps the glucose inside the cell where we need it to stay so we can use it to work on it and harness its energy. So first step, trap it inside the cell. Next, through a series of a bunch of steps, some high energy hydrogens and electrons, which I abbreviated with a red hot H plus E minus to remember that represents high energy, are removed. That means the glucose is oxidized. And the HE, the high energy, is going to be picked up by NAD for later use. Therefore, the NAD is reduced. Remember, when something's oxidized, something's reduced. This is a good time to review a little bit about NAD. Remember, we covered that earlier in the chemistry lectures. NAD is a coenzyme. Coenzymes carry things away from chemical reactions. And NAD is a very important thing that's going to carry the products of these chemical reactions away. NAD is going to carry the high energy away where it's going to be used later on to be converted into ATP. Next, an enzyme, don't worry about the name of it, but an enzyme helps break apart a glucose molecule into 2-3 carbon molecules called pyruvic acid. That's the glycolysis part, if you will. That's the busting apart glucose. We're going to split it. We're going to split our 6-carbon glucose into 2-3-carbon molecules called pyruvic acid. So we did our glycolysis. At the end of this process, we have a net gain of 2 ATPs from 1 molecule of glucose in glycolysis with a star. That is such a famous test question. You just have to know it. Whether I ask it or not, it's just important to know. It's classic. So here's our molecule of glucose that I created. We're going to do glycolysis. Watch, I'm going to do it right here on the slide. Make sure you're watching, you're going to miss it. Boom, there it is, through the use of an enzyme. We're going to chop 6-carbon glucose in half, and we're going to end up with 2 3-carbon groups, which we'll call pyruvic acid. Got another visual for you. Remember, this is all happening in the cytosol. In the cytosol, we're going to take a molecule of glucose. We're going to glycolyse it. That's called glycolysis. That means we're going to chop it in half with an enzyme. And we're going to end up with 2 pyruvic acid molecules, which contain 3 carbons. Where are we going next? We're going to go into a cellular organelle called a mitochondrion. Now, that is something we're going to study in great detail when we do the cell structure and function unit. Many of you may even remember from high school biology that mitochondria are the powerhouses of the cell. Yeah, they are the powerhouses. That's where we're going to create our ATP. Most of the ATP in the human body is created inside mitochondria. And the tissues and organs in our body that need the most energy, they of course have the most mitochondria. Isn't that cool the way that works out? So we are going to next take that pyruvic acid molecule that we created in glycolysis, and we're going to deliver it right here inside the mitochondria, the powerhouse of the cell, so that we can start to crank out some serious ATP. And there is our pyruvic acid molecule. Did a little bit of animated PowerPoint here for fun. Made that red star rotate. If you missed it, let me show it there again. Boom, there it is. There's our 3-carbon pyruvic acid molecule. No, you don't have to be able to write down the chemical formula. Just know it's a 3-carbon fragment that we're left with. Now we're ready to talk about step two of cellular respiration, which is formation of acetyl coenzyme A. You must know that this and every other step, remember, in cellular respiration is aerobic. That means they need oxygen. Where does this take place? The location is in the matrix of the mitochondria. That's right, the powerhouse of the cell. We're going to look in detail in some visuals coming up of the pieces of the mitochondria. The matrix, essentially for right now, just think of the matrix as the middle liquidy part of the mitochondria, okay? So it's the middle liquidy soup of the mitochondria. What happens there? The pyruvic acid that we just shoved into the mitochondria is oxidized. And NAD picks up the hydrogens and electrons. It picks up the H plus E minus. Remember, HE represents high energy. When we oxidize something, we're burning the fuel. We're harvesting the high energy, the HE. Also, in this step, one carbon from pyruvic acid is removed as carbon dioxide, which leaves a two-carbon fragment called the acetyl group. The acetyl group is then carried to the all-important Krebs cycle by an old friend of ours called coenzyme A, which on the weekends when I'm out drinking Pepsi with my friends, we all call it CoA. Remember again, we talked about coenzymes. These are things that help enzymes. They help carry away products from enzymatic reactions. And again, the purpose of CoA is to carry the acetyl group into the Krebs cycle. Again, so we can start cranking out some serious ATP. The acetyl group plus CoA is called acetyl coenzyme A. Or again, if you want to be one of my friends on the weekends, we simply call it acetyl CoA. And look, that's not really rocket science. The acetyl group plus CoA is called acetyl CoA. Great question for you on the bottom of the slide. This is a great example of a typical test question that we all like to ask. How many acetyl groups may be derived from one glucose molecule? Take a couple minutes to think about this. Just don't blurt out the answer. Think about what we did so far in the prior steps. And if you think about it carefully, if you think about it critically, you'll come up with a correct answer. And the correct answer is, wait for it, two. Two acetyl groups can be derived from one glucose molecule. And, okay, awesome. Well, there's an animated PowerPoint visual for us to look at that I hope will help us learn formation of acetyl-CoA. What we have here is showing you that cellular organelle we'll get to know and love as a mitochondria, and that is the powerhouse of the cell. Remember what we just did in glycolysis? We shoved the three-carbon pyruvic acid molecule into the matrix, or the middle soupy liquidy part of the mitochondrion. And what did we do to form acetyl-CoA? Well, we went ahead and we oxidized it. We burned off one of those high energy hydrogens. And NAD, remember, is going to suck them up and carry away the H plus E minus, our high energy hydrogen and electrons. Also, we're going to burn off a carbon dioxide as well. So we remove one carbon as our old friend CO2, and after we do those chemical manipulations, we end up with, there it is, with a revolving pink star, a two-carbon acetyl group shown right here in green. We combine it with our friend coenzyme A, and we form, you guessed it, acetyl CoA. What happens next? well, we're ready to move on now to the Krebs cycle. I'm going to cut out most of the details because it really is just too trivial for this course, and just let you know the bullet points you need to know at this level. First of all, yes, you know it's aerobic. Everything's aerobic except glycolysis. Location, once again, it's in the matrix, liquidy middle soup of the mitochondria. Recall again that the acetyl group is carried by CoA to this series of chemical reactions that is called the Krebs cycle, which is named after the person who discovered it. What happens here? Let me make a real long story real short. The acetyl group, that two-carbon group, passes through a series of oxidation-reduction reactions where high-energy hydrogens and electrons are again going to be removed. Remember, that's our energy we want. And this is the big point. This, again, is the Mac Daddy point. Coenzymes, NAD, as well as FAD, are going to pick up the red hot HE, the high energy, with triple stars all around it. This is the most important outcome of the Krebs cycle, since now the NAD and FAD, those coenzymes, now have the hydrogens and electrons whose high energy will later be transferred to ATP. So circle this whole thing, because this is really the bottom line big deal about the Krebs cycle. While you're trying to digest this, let me just take a minute and tell you a little bit of a review and a little bit of something that happened this morning on my way here. NAD and FAD, those are coenzymes that carry high energy away from the Krebs cycle during those series of chemical reactions that take place. Remember, all of our coenzymes we talked about, NAD, FAD, and also coenzyme A, they all required B vitamins for their production. That's why in the energy drinks, at least it's the theory behind it, again, I'm not advocating it, in those energy drinks, there's all kinds of them out there now, they pump them up with B vitamins. And the thinking is, whoever invented those knew a little bit about anatomy and physiology and said, hey man, maybe if I jack these drinks up with some B vitamins, then whoever drinks them is going to, you know, get a charge of energy out of them. And I was at Dunkin' Donuts this morning. You might remember, I love Dunkin' Donuts. But anyway, I was there, and my son had an energy drink. He's 8 years old. Maybe that wasn't the right thing to do. Don't tell my wife I did that. But anyway, he had one of those energy drinks, and I'm reading the bottle. Sure enough, B vitamins in there. Anyway, the point is NAD and FAD are critical to pick up the high energy. What else happens in the Krebs cycle? Both carbons are removed from the acetyl group and are released as carbon dioxide. Blood will transport the carbon dioxide to the lungs. That's not rocket science, where it can then be exhaled. Here comes a bullet point that tends to be one of those things that pops up in future situations when you're asked questions. You need to know that one molecule of ATP is generated during what they call one turn of the Krebs cycle from one acetyl group. Each acetyl group, if you pass it through the Krebs cycle, generates one ATP. So, another great question, how many CO2s are released in one turn of the Krebs cycle? Well, you have to remember that the acetyl group is a two-carbon group. So, how many carbon dioxides can we get out of a two carbon group if we churn it through and break it apart in the Krebs cycle. It's not that hard. The answer is two. So two CO2s are released in one turn of the Krebs cycle from one acetyl group. Ah, now check this question out. How much ATP is generated in the Krebs cycle from one molecule of glucose? From one molecule of glucose. The answer you must know, again, is two. Two ATPs from one molecule of glucose. Now let's hold on right here, because there's some other questions that could be generated from this information you've just been given. They're not trick questions. There's no such thing as a trick question. There's bad questions, and I find them on the test, either before, during, or after the test. I find them, and when I do, I fix them, and I give you all the credit for it, so don't worry about that. But I mean what I say, and I say what I mean on the test. Don't overthink them. Let me ask this a different way then, since you know this information. How much ATP is generated in the Krebs cycle from one acetyl group? The answer would have to be one. Be ready for different combinations of questions I could ask you like that. A little bit more about the Krebs cycle. Well, here it is off to your lower right. Thank goodness I'm going to skip all that gobbledygook. I mean, for crying out loud, that's that isn't necessary, is it? But just know this. In the Krebs cycle, a whole series of different acids are formed, and the only one I want you to know by name is citric acid. It is the first acid formed. I have it here in a pink rectangular box. Why do I want you to know that? Because a synonym for the Krebs cycle you may see in some textbooks and so forth is the citric acid cycle. That's why I want you to know that one and only one acid. Okay, now we're ready to move on to the thing that is the most important, arguably, in all of cellular respiration. This is what is going to crank out some serious ATP. If you remember, in summary, glycolysis, net gain of ATP from a molecule of glucose, only two. If you remember, in summary, net gain of ATP from the Krebs cycle, from one molecule of glucose, easy for me to say, only two ATP. The electron transport chain is going to make that look like chicken feed. So let's talk about the electron transport chain, which is typically abbreviated ETC. By the way, it is what it says it is. It's a chain of stuff that's going to transport electrons, all those high energy electrons. And at the end of the chain, we're going to crank out a bunch of ATP. Again, this is aerobic. Everything's aerobic except glycolysis. Location, a little bit different here. Check this out. The ETC takes place on the inner membrane and cristae of the mitochondria. I'm going to use a couple of diagrams to show you what this is, because until you really get this in cell structure and function, it's going to be hard to understand. So let me break into it right now. Here is a drawing of the powerhouse of the cell called a mitochondrion. It actually has a double membrane, just like the nucleus had a double membrane. And each of those membranes is exactly like the cell membrane. In other words, each of those membranes is actually a phospholipid bilayer. So we have actually two phospholipid bilayers. One shown here in orange is the outer membrane because it's on the outside, you got it. And then shown here in yellow on the inside is the inner membrane because it's on the inside. Got an arrow on here, inner membrane on the inside. Again, it's a phospholipid bilayer all by itself. Then, every once in a while, you'll see that the inner membrane kind of folds in and forms these crest-like structures, like on the crest of a bird, like a blue jay or a cardinal, and they're called cristae. And the Greek root word for cristae means crest. It looked like a crest of a bird. You should know that the ETC, the electron transport chain chemical reactions, are taking place on this inner membrane. What happens there? Well, all that NAD and FAD that we've been talking about, especially from the Krebs cycle, will shuttle their high energy hydrogens and electrons. Remember, H plus E minus. NAD carry HE, high energy, into the electron transport chain. Those red hot electrons with a red hot star are transferred along membrane proteins, proteins that are embedded in that inner membrane. And those proteins are called electron carriers. That ain't rocket science either. And those electron carriers power something, energize something called proton pumps. Proton pumps are hydrogen ion pumps. H plus, that represents a proton, doesn't it? If you remember the structure of hydrogen, H plus is a proton. Proton pumps are hydrogen pumps. And electrons supply, if you will, the electricity to power the proton pumps. Those high energy hydrogens then move through the pumps, and it's kind of like passing along hot potatoes. On this slide, I wanted to show you a better visual of the mitochondria because it helps you, I think, get organized in your brain and where all this stuff is happening. So here's a really cool picture. It's a mitochondria. It's a drawing blown up real big. It's trying to show you that it is a double membrane structure. Here's the outer mitochondrial membrane in orange. It is a phospholipid bilayer. Then there's the inner mitochondrial membrane in yellow. Again, it is a phospholipid bilayer. Here are the infoldings, if you will. I don't know if that's real proper English or not, but anyway, these are the crest-like structure called the cristae. Notice there is a space between the outer and the inner mitochondrial membranes. That space is going to be important coming up on the next slide. Finally, want to mention something we looked at earlier. This inner middle liquidy soupy part of the mitochondria, that's called the mitochondrial matrix. What I'm going to do on the next slide is this. I'm going to take my pointer like a knife and I'm going to cut out a piece of this inner mitochondrial membrane, because after all, this is where the reactions of the all-important electron transport chain are taking place. So let's cut this out, suck it up, blow it up, and plaster it on the next slide in a drawing. Here it comes. Get ready. Boom. Here is the inner mitochondrial membrane we just looked at in yellow. Yes, it is a phospholipid bilayer. And recall I mentioned there is a space between the outer and the inner mitochondrial membranes. This is important so you can understand the stuff coming up. So the outer mitochondrial membrane in orange would be up here somewhere. Here's the inner one in yellow, and then the liquidy middle mishmash is really not called a mishmash, it's called the matrix. So this is sort of a big blow-up view that I kind of sucked out of the figure on the previous slide. Make sure you're oriented. Electricity from electrons are being carried by electron carriers. Think of that like a wire. Those wires are carrying electricity as electrons, and those wires are powering these orange proton pumps. and we're pumping protons through the inner mitochondrial membrane and into the space between the inner and outer membranes. That's a critical point. Write it down. There's different kind of proton pumps. They have different names. All the specifics really are just not important at this level and for our course. But there are some I do want you to know. Some proton pumps include what are called cytochromes with a star. Cytochromes, I do want you to know, because you will see when you study pharmacology, they will play a critical role in metabolism. So know for my course that some proton pumps are called cytochromes. As a matter of fact, I'll give you right now something that's clinically relevant, because some of you might be thinking, oh my goodness, this is so trivial. Now we're playing Trivial Pursuit in this course. This stuff can't possibly be useful to know in real life at all. Well, it will be when you study pharmacology. And also, I'll give you an example of how it's important in cyanide poisoning. There was just a case in the news today where somebody was killed by cyanide poisoning. And what cyanide does is it basically damages some of these proton pumps, some of these cytochromes in the last stages, if you will, of the electron transport chain. And again, if you poison the pumps, you're not going to make energy. And if we don't have ATP, we don't have long for this world. So yeah, even this is clinically relevant. This slide is absolutely the bomb. This is the slide that kind of ties together everything and it finally gets us to our end game, which is going to be where we're cranking out the ATP. Let me summarize the visual. Let's understand this diagram so we can put it all together. Here is, again, mostly in yellow, the inner mitochondrial membrane. This is where the reactions of the electron transport chain are taking place. On the previous slides, we were talking about how electrons, right, were going through some electron carriers. I made the analogy that electrons were kind of like electricity flowing through wires, and those wires with the electricity were powering these proton pumps, and those proton pumps were pumping protons, hydrogen ions, into the space between the outer and inner mitochondrial membranes, shown up here in blue. So here's a visual. There's the space between inner and outer mitochondrial membranes, and that's where we're pumping, boom, a high concentration of hydrogen ions by using the proton pumps. So we end up with a very high concentration in that space, and we end up, therefore, with a very low concentration down here in the matrix of the mitochondria. What does that do? Well, we set up this concentration gradient, and that concentration gradient serves as a source of potential energy. It's what we call a proton motive force. I think of it like a locomotive force. Now we have the setup that we've been waiting for. We have this potential energy. We have this proton motive force. And the protons, the hydrogen ions, are going to flow through something called, you guessed it, hydrogen channels, down their concentration gradient, because that's what things like to do in the body. Things like to flow from high concentration to low concentration. So here come the hydrogen ions through the hydrogen channels down their concentration gradient. And those channels, this is key, are tied to something called ATP synthase. And that's what creates the ATP. ATP synthase is part of this protein channel. ATP synthase, you already know it's an enzyme. How do you know? Because it ends with ASE, like almost all other enzymes. And what does it do? It does what the name says it does. It synthesizes ATP. So I think of these high energy hydrogens flowing down these channels in this protein structure, which is tied to an enzyme called ATP synthase. And literally this thing turns like a turbine. Think of this thing cranking or winding or turning like a turbine of an engine. And that's what happens when the protons flow down those channels. And it winds this puppy up. It gets ATP synthase fired up, and in the process creates ATP. And finally, we've done our job. And it creates a lot of ATP. These turbines really pump it out. Also, as a byproduct, just like an engine, it creates a little bit of heat. And yeah, this is the source of some of the heat in our body. When we turn these turbines, when we fire these pumps up, when we crank out the ATP, one of the byproducts is body heat. At the bottom of the slide, I've inserted some really cool fun factoids, if you will. It is Trivial Pursuit. You do not have to know it from my course, which means, of course, you're all going to memorize what's below, but you don't have to. But this is kind of cool. It is said that there's about 1 billion molecules of ATP in a typical human body cell. Each molecule only lasts for about less than 1 minute, though. So this really is short-term energy money, if you will. Each ATP molecule is recycled about 1,500 times a day, and we use up to our body weight in ATP per day. All interesting little factoids. Not needed for a testing situation, but man, you'll impress your friends and relatives on the weekends. Some final details about the electron transport chain. At the very end, when we turn that turbine, a total of 32 to 34 molecules of ATP can be generated from 1 molecule of glucose in the electron transport chain. You better highlight that. You bet you got to know that. So, another great question. How many molecules of ATP can be generated from 1 molecule of glucose by all processes in cellular respiration? You should be able to figure this out. Of course, above you have how many molecules are generated from the electron transport chain. So you got that number easy because it's right there staring at you. Then you got to remember how much ATP we did in the other steps. Thinking about it? Okay, I'll give you a refresher. In glycolysis, net gain of 2 ATP. Krebs cycle, net gain of 2 ATP. Therefore, a total of 36 to 38 molecules of ATP can be generated from 1 molecule of glucose by all processes in cellular respiration. That's what you need to write down, because that sounds like a test question. How do I know? Because I make the tests. Another beauty. What is the final hydrogen acceptor and what substance is formed? Remember, I like to think of that hydrogen like a hot potato. It's high energy. We got to pass it along. We got to send it through these pumps and these channels, and we got to churn out that ATP and that turbine at the very end. But something also has to finally accept that hot potato hydrogen. So you must know this, and it's really awesome, and it ties into the whole big picture, the circle of life we started with. The final hydrogen acceptor, guess what, is oxygen. And when we combine hydrogen with oxygen, we form our old friend, water. Yeah, water's formed in the end, inside of our cells. I hope you don't mind that at the bottom of the slide, I pulled a little clip art out. Number one, for to have a little bit of fun. Number two, maybe to help you remember some of this stuff. So here it goes. It was my best shot. Here is a hot potato. But I think of the hot potato really as having the HE. That's the high energy hydrogens and electrons. And we got to do something with them useful, which is make energy. So we're passing along the high energy hot potato. It goes along the electron transport chain, and in the end we fire up that turbine, which is tied to ATP synthase, and we crank out 32 to 34 molecules of ATP just through the ETC. What else do we end up with though? We just don't create ATP at the end of the electron transport chain. We also produce, I'm trying to show in this slide, we also produce some heat. Yeah, there's some heat. We also produce a little bit of water. And there's the human being, that's us, and hopefully we're using the energy. I know what some of you might be thinking. This is a little bit too corny. Dr. Gonshore's going over the edge. Well, that's debatable. But the point is, the cornier stuff is, the more it sticks in your brain. And you got to come up with a lot of stuff to help you memorize A and P, because it just keeps on coming at you. So it reminds me of a true story, by the way. I was in another career, you may know, I was an eye surgeon, and I was in a practice, and we hired a hotshot advertising executive to come up with a plan to advertise for a practice. And I remember sitting around one day at the boardroom table, and we brought him in and we said, okay, what's your big idea to advertise for our practice? And he said, we're going to have a billboard. On the billboard, we're going to have put a bunny rabbit, and the bunny rabbit's going to have carrots in his mouth, and the billboard's going to say, need good vision? Eat carrots. And come see the eye doctors at such and such a place, which I won't mention. And I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe my eyes and ears. And I looked them right in the eyeballs, because I'm thinking, I'm paying you all that money, and this is all I'm getting? So I looked at him in the eye, eye to eye, man to man. I said, that's corny. And I'll never forget this. He looked right back at me, stared me in my eyes, didn't blink once, and he said to me, corn sells. And the point of that was, the cornier things are, the more people remember them. It's called top of mind advertising. So that's why advertisers do it. They do corny things sometimes. And that's why we gotta have these corny memorization techniques in our heads. So yeah, I'm okay. I've just come up with corny visuals to help us remember stuff. I love this slide. This slide is a nice summary slide. When you first look at it, you're thinking, ooh, this is too much. I can't take it. It's real super busy. But this slide has everything on it when you really study this. And look, you're going to have to study it. This is not one of those things where you listen to this one time, say, yep, I got it. Now I'm going to go home. I'll tell Uncle Bob all about cellular respiration. I remember when I was your age, I had to study this kind of stuff like 10 times. And then I had to, ask the professor some questions to tie some loose ends together. So don't worry. That's kind of par for the course. But this is one of those slides you should be able to come back with and put it all together. It has the four steps of cellular respiration labeled with these four blue bubbles. It shows you the key ingredients that I put red stars on that are produced at the end of each of those steps. For example, at the end of glycolysis, we got a couple ATP. Also, I'll skip down here. Remember, at the end of the Krebs cycle, we had a net of 2 ATP from one molecule of glucose. most importantly, along the way, notice all along the way we have mostly NAD, but also FAD, our coenzymes that are carrying away the H plus E minus, the high energy to the all-important electron transport chain, where we're going to crank out a whole mess of ATP when we fire up that turbine, shown here as 32 to 34 molecules of ATP from the electron transport chain alone. Also, I put a star next to some other byproducts of cellular respiration, which include H2O, because please recall that we have to have something to accept that hot potato hydrogen at the end of the electron transport chain. Oxygen is happy to accept it and form our friendly molecule for the human body called water. Also, I threw in another clip art visual here of a car. I'm just really into cars, always was. As a matter of fact, I worked in a Sears Automotive for about 3 years. In any case, I wanted to be a mechanic, but that gig didn't work out, so I'm doing this instead. But anyway, the car is actually a really good example. You put gasoline in instead of glucose. That's the fuel. You burn the fuel. You get energy to move the car, like we get energy to move our bodies and our cells. And in the end, what do you put out? You know, well, that car motor gets hot when you burn the fuel. So that'll help you remember that we also put out heat. And you know what comes out of the tailpipe? This is kind of cool. What comes out of the tailpipe? Do you ever see dripping out of there some liquid? That's water, because that's a byproduct of burning fuel in a car too. So the water dripping out helps me remember water is a byproduct of cellular respiration. And then lots of gases are put out, but one of the gases does include carbon dioxide. Just like in the human body, when we're burning our fuel, we're putting out a lot of CO2 as well. So that's in this. So the car example really works good for my brain, and hopefully it'll help some of you. Down below, finally, on this slide anyway, got the chemical formula. Yes, I want you to know it. It's not that hard. You should know what these things represent, and you should know the numbers. I'll do it one time, then you review it at home. Here's our hexose. That's our glucose, cellular fuel of choice. You know it's C6H12O6. We take in some oxygen, specifically 6O2. Then what do we put out in the end? 6 carbon dioxide molecules, 6 water molecules, some ATP, you know how much ATP, and some heat. That's the total chemical reaction. Not too hard to remember. Notice all those sixes, by the way, that pop up throughout that formula, and I think that'll help you remember. Here we go again on this slide, one of those interactions animations from your textbook. You do have to be in full screen PowerPoint mode to make these work. I think you'll really love this one. You can click your way through step by step by step. It's a great visual video animation summary of everything we did. I believe it'll help it gel all together so that you could really learn and understand what we've just talked about. Before we leave this section, I want to at least talk about oxygen debt, because you hear about it like when you're in the gym working out. So when you're talking with your buddies there, I want you to sound like a nice, big, bad, smart A&P student. So here's the deal. When metabolic processes like what we were just talking about are running faster than we can supply the oxygen to accept the hydrogen, we are, for lack of a better phrase, out of breath. What happens? Well, we switch to anaerobic respiration. Remember, anaerobic means without oxygen. When we switch to anaerobic respiration, one of the metabolic byproducts that builds up is lactic acid. And that builds up on our muscle tissue, and it burns. You've heard the term feel the burn. Well, that's the burning from the lactic acid. eventually most of the lactic acid converted back to pyruvic acid and can be used again to produce energy, and the burn, of course, eventually goes away. So what does oxygen debt really mean? Oxygen debt really means or refers to the amount of oxygen taken in after exercise over and above the resting oxygen to pay back or restore metabolic conditions back to balance, back to homeostasis with a star. You know, you sit there afterwards and you're still hot and you're still huffing and puffing and all that stuff. Well, that's you taking in extra oxygen over and above oxygen that you would be taking in a normal resting state to pay back yourself because you overdid it, so you can restore your metabolic state back to balance, back to homeostasis. So that's what oxygen debt is. Well, folks, that's going to do it for us as far as our discussion on cellular respiration. I know that's a lot of stuff, not everyone's favorite, but hopefully I've given you enough tips and tricks, tools, some visuals and videos where you can go home, work with it, and put it together.